This Anzac Day is going to be like no other in the past 75 years. There'll be no marches, no wreath laying, no crowds. Across all wars since 1901, more than 102,000 Australian men and women have lost their lives, and there were First Nations people amongst them. In spite of the fact that they weren't considered citizens and there were restrictions on allowing them to participate, many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women still managed to enlist or help the war effort in other ways. But why did they want to? That's the question Annie Haswell asked Indigenous Liaison Officer at the Australian War Memorial, Ngunnawal Gomeroi man, Michael Bell.
Same reasons and patriotic reasons as their non-Indigenous brothers and sisters, but it also offered our people an opportunity to get out from under the protector of Aboriginals or the unequal society that was being offered on the day. The army paid equal pay and you got recognition for your abilities just as good, just as equally as your non-Indigenous brothers and sisters. But also it's that the dignity of being recognised as being useful to your country yet again.
Was racism evident within the army during the war, or was everybody really accepted as equals, do you think?
There are only very relatively few accounts of our men being treated racist, with racist attitudes, and generally that gets sorted out within the first week, because the bonds of war and the bonds of battle need to be forged deeply before you go into battle. You need to rely on the man beside you. So what we're finding is that about 95% of the men are treated equally in service. Of course, after and prior to service are two different kettles of fish, where the society remained unequally divided and it was harsher on Aboriginal people during those times.
And how were the communities back home feeling about them being in the war?
It's a place of pride for some communities because we have letters on the service records of our member family trying to find out what had happened to them and clarifying, can you tell me how to contact my son or daughter or whatever the case may be. So there's equal amount of pride in that, and the amount of pride that we see on the ceremonies for the men to go away to war. We have a very vivid recognition of a corroboree being held down in Maroopna for Aboriginal soldiers leaving to go to the Second World War, and it's talked about how they sung in language and they were farewelled, and it was the first time a corroboree had been held in the area for quite some time, and it was a very auspicious occasion, and people travelled for hundreds of kilometres to come and attend that farewell ceremony.
It's really amazing, though, because considering how Aboriginal people were being treated all the time before, it was actually very gracious of them to choose to support the war effort.
Oh, without a doubt. And it comes, I think, off the pen and starts with our most recognised Indigenous recognition campaigns. William Cooper, who he views AIF first service in the First World War as a pathway to citizenship. That pathway to citizenship and recognition through military enlistment is a strong connecting factor for a lot of the movements and rights movements for our people during that time.
Has that continued through the wars that have happened since? Have Aboriginal people continued to want to participate in service?
Yes, most definitely so, especially more so in the Second World War and also with the impending threat of the Japanese invasion. The communities up at the top end, especially in the north or northern of Australia, were heavily involved with providing support facilities to the radar stations and army bases and airfields that were put in place to help defend the top end of the country in the Torres Strait Islanders. Those people also need to be recognised, and they may not think that we are looking to tell their stories, but we are, because it's a part of the defence of Australia. You know, you don't have to have a tin hat and a gun and a service number to be recognised.
Like the ones out on the islands who would warn Darwin when there was an air raid coming.
That's exactly right. The coast watchers and the observers, the men from the Snake Bay Patrol, who were the quite famous image of the men out of Melville Island parading in Navy uniforms, and they're presented in parade with guns. But none of those men were paid. They were providing the services of sailors and coast watchers to the ADF, but never got paid. And that's the recognition that we need to understand, that larger commitment from the overall communities. So we want to tell the full story, not just the soldier story.
Do you think there's lots of stories out there that we haven't heard yet within communities?
Without a doubt, and that's what my call is to ask the community to make sure that they think about or know and tell me their name, the name of their descendant that may have fought, so that we can have a full understanding of the commitment. Because the men and the numbers and names that we have here, men and women's stories, we only know because they've been provided us by community. And because the race wasn't always mentioned on the enlistment papers, we're looking at over a million people. And to go through all those records, we need the community to direct us to say, have a look at this record, because he's my grandfather and he was Aboriginal.
Ngunnawal Gomeroi man, Michael Bell, he's Indigenous Liaison Officer at the Australian War Memorial, and he was speaking to Annie Haswell. And as Michael said, he really wants to hear from any community that has stories of war involvement that haven't been told. We'll put the details on our website of how you can contact him.